And welcome into today's audio cast for Monday, Labor Day, September 3rd, 2007, from AvWeb, the world's premier independent aviation news resource. Brought to you today by Aviation Safety, and I'm Mike Blakeney reporting. And just a program note, be sure to stay with us at the end of today's interview, because starting today, I'll read some listener comments about recent reports occasionally when we have some that are interesting, and today we have some that are interesting and provocative. Now, aviation lost an icon last week when Bill Piper Jr. died at the age of 96 in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. Piper worked alongside his brothers, Tony and Pug, under the guidance of founder Bill Piper Sr. to create not just a company, but help develop the entire general aviation industry. His nephew John was close to Bill Jr. and spoke to AvWeb's editor-in-chief Russ Niles about his uncle's accomplishments on what it was like to grow up in the first family of general aviation.
Well, he was a pretty neat individual, frankly. He was he didn't have any children of his own when we were growing up, and so we were, all of the nephews and nieces were that all lived in Lock Haven with him were kind of his adopted kids, and he was just a very easygoing, very capable individual, I guess, is what most people remember him. Just a very friendly guy, very considerate. At the funeral service the other day, that seemed to be the main theme that everybody talked about, was how he was just always such a gentleman and a pleasure to be around, and he made everybody else around him very comfortable. And he had a neat sense of humor and was very gifted in athletics and other endeavors like that, so he could do an awful lot of things, and so he was fun to be around, and as kids we always enjoyed him. And I ended up being a real avid golfer, as was he, so we spent a lot of time together with me caddying for him and he teaching me things and that sort of thing, in addition to what we did with regard to aircraft. So from my standpoint, it was a pretty great situation.
Okay, he was 96 when he died, and I gather he'd had a fall, and that just sort of led to his death. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. He would have been 97 in a couple of weeks. Yeah, he had been having some dementia issues, and he had some lingering lung problems from a illness that he had like 10 years ago. But he was, otherwise in pretty good shape, but he was getting kind of frail at 96, and he fell and broke a hip, and they did surgery on the hip. Surgery went okay, but he never really recovered from it, and I think his body just couldn't stand all of that, and he died in his sleep on Thursday night, Friday morning, about 3 o'clock in the morning last week.
Okay, so what was it like growing up in the first family of general aviation in the 50s and 60s?
Well, it was pretty nice, actually. I don't know how familiar you are with what things were like prior to that time, but the company struggled before and then after World War II to do things and to stay in business and all that sort of thing. But by the time the 50s and the 60s came around, they were doing pretty well. We introduced the Apache in 1954, and then the Comanche came in 1956. So we had, grown beyond the Cub and the Cub derivative type airplanes, the Tri-Pacers and those sorts of things. And of course, we had, my dad was Tony, and my other uncle was Pug, and between the three of them, they had all grown up in the business from the time they were in high school and college in the 30s, and so they were all rather accomplished pilots, and so every time we went anywhere, it was pretty much in a Piper plane, and so, that was kind of a little different, and very nice, especially as you look back at the time, you probably didn't think much about it. Thought it was pretty normal stuff. One of the things that struck me is as the industry went along, and especially after the decline after the 70s and things went downhill in the 80s, it was pretty exciting times, because in the 50s and 60s, Piper had probably two or three models in current and new development stages at a time almost every year, each year. And these days, it's pretty rare for a company to have more than one airplane in development, and not more often than many every several years, So it was lots of stuff going on, lots of new airplanes being designed and tried and built, and pretty exciting times. And we watched the company grow, like I say, from the time the Apache came in and then the Comanche and then finally the Cherokee line down in Vero Beach. It was pretty exciting stuff and a lot of growth and a lot of new models from an airplane standpoint. So it was a good time.
These days, the term family business is sort of overdone when it comes to corporate image and that sort of thing, but Piper was a family business, right?
Pretty much so, yep. My grandfather was, of course, the head man in the operation, and like I say, his three boys all joined the company as they got out of college, and of course they worked at it and learned to fly and all that prior to going to college. And so it was pretty much a family business. As it turned out, over the years, they sold stock to raise capital for developments and factories and that kind of stuff. And we ended up having, by the mid-60s or so, we had about probably 5,000 employees between our plants in Florida and Pennsylvania. By then, the ownership had, from a percentage standpoint, the family controlled about 35% of the stock. In retrospect, that probably was not the greatest thing to do because we got taken over in the late 60s, early 70s on an unfriendly takeover. From a family standpoint, went downhill from there in a hurry. But as it was a very much a family organization. And the neat part about it, as I talked to former employees, either from Lock Haven or from the Vero Beach area, almost to a person, they'll tell you that working at Piper spoiled them for whatever job they had subsequent to working for Piper, because it was just such a neat atmosphere. And they, largely because of my granddad, but also because of the three sons, they all were very, you know, easygoing, unassuming type people and didn't demand any special attention. In fact, they demanded they don't have any special attention. And so it was a very comfortable place to be, and a lot of good things were happening and a lot of competent people working there. But it was very much a family atmosphere, not just within the family, but within the whole organization. So that was kind of unique, too.
Well, Piper is on the move these days. You're well aware they're building a jet, and they've modernized the line, some of which are a legacy to your time at Piper. So what are your views on Piper and the industry in general?
Well, it does appear that Piper has turned a corner, if you will. The current management down there seems to be, I don't really know very many of them at all anymore, but they seem to be doing a very nice job with it and doing a lot of the right things. The industry has sure changed a lot. A lot of the focus of the, you know, in our day, Piper, Cessna, and Beach were the big three, and we all built complete families of aircraft and had a family, pretty much family ownership, which all changed in the late 60s, early 70s in all three companies. And the focus changed from the owner-flown airplanes, if you will, to the higher priced jets and turboprops and that kind of stuff on all companies. And so the whole, you know, and now those lower priced models and whatnot are being built by mostly other people, and they're doing quite well with those. So, but the industry is totally different than when I knew it because of the just the sheer volumes. I mean, we were building in Vero Beach, if you can believe it, in the heyday in the late 60s and 70s. We were building up to 20 airplanes a day down there, and now they're building like 20 a month. And so it's a whole different atmosphere and a whole different pace. But things seem to be doing, you know, the industry seems to be doing quite well, and it's encouraging. People have asked, you know, what they can do in terms of a memorial or whatever for Uncle Bill and Bill Piper Jr., if you will. And one of his pet projects is the Piper Museum in Lock Haven. And he helped an awful lot getting that thing going. And so we've requested donations to the Piper Museum for anybody that's interested in that sort of a thing. And it would be greatly appreciated and a neat testimony to what he meant to this industry.
And that was Bill Piper Jr.'s nephew, John. We appreciate him being on the program today. The world's best website for general aviation news and information is www.avweb.com. And this fall, the rubber will meet the runway on many issues that will impact general aviation on a number of levels, so be sure to sign up for Avweb Flash or News Alerts. Where there are significant developments, e-bulletins will be sent out to Avweb Flash subscribers alerting you to important developments as they occur. You can sign up at avweb.com. And now some Avweb Audio listener comments regarding Friday's interview with former Transportation Secretary Jim Burnley. Avweb subscriber Doug L. wrote in to say, concerning Mr. Burnley's comments, as far as I am concerned, he represents everything that is wrong with Washington. He is clearly clueless about the general aviation population. He has no sense of our concerns about the slippery slopes that this could be. And to represent Amtrak and the USPS, the U.S. Postal Service, as something to look up to and emulate clearly shows that his comments are are warped and should be discarded outright. There is absolutely no reason in the world to imply that we are behind the times because other modern countries do it different. We are the greatest country in the world because we do things different. If he thinks corporatization is so great, then let's have the Corporation Limited to Board of Directors from only piston-powered airplane owner users and see what they think of that. The squeal and whine would be heard around the world. Then AudioCast listener Tom wrote in to say, I strongly disagree with Burnley. If the FAA would do its job as now defined and stop playing politics, the mass of the problem would go away. There is no reason why the FAA cannot use a corporate model as other government agencies have without changing the political fundraising side. They don't know how to spend what they have now efficiently. Then regarding our AudioCast on carbon neutral plans for pilots, Barry S. writes, I find it disgusting that you are supporting a farce such as carbon offsets for aviation. It is a scam that you are promoting. If you feel guilty, stop flying, stop driving, cooking, etc. Do not try to saddle your guilt-ridden socialist agenda on the rest of us. Please remove me from the AvWeb email service. AvWeb Editor-in-Chief Russ Niles replies, Come on, Brian, just because we ran a story about it doesn't mean we have any kind of agenda, and just because you feel like that about carbon offsets doesn't mean everyone else does. You're certainly free not to take part in those programs, but why shouldn't others know about them so they can make up their own minds? That's from Russ Niles. If you would like to comment on today's report or a previous audio cast, email us at audionews@avweb.com. Today's report was brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention. Look for AvWeb's next audio cast on Friday, September 7th. I'm Mike Blakeney for the AvWeb Audio News Team saying Happy Labor Day and thanks for listening.